Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Mythic Gaming with Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. But first, a quick Mythic game review. Olympus Lunacy by Looney Labs was ingeniously designed by Andrew Looney and wonderfully illustrated by Echo Cherney. It's a game for 2 to 5 players, ages 5 to adult, and each game lasts for about 5 to 10 minutes. Olympus Lunacy is essentially a frenetic and fun picture matching contest, as well as an educational tool for teaching folks the Greek and Roman names of the Olympian pantheon. Your goal is to match and get rid of all the cards in your deck before anyone else does. There are a few simple and eccentric rules, such as everyone goes first, yes, everyone goes first, and continues as fast as they care to until the game is over. There is even a rule for those wishing to walk away, I kid you not, and I won't spoil the rest. You also get a cool Mythic poster behind the rule sheet and a nifty catalog. As an added bonus, a link to their website where you can find ways of adapting Olympus Lunacy to play other card games such as Solitaire and Go Fish. I give Olympus Lunacy 2 thumbs up. If I had more thumbs, I'd give it more thumbs up. And I'm looking forward to integrating it into my Olympian teaching activities later this semester. Thanks again, Looney Labs. And now for Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing well yourself.
I'm doing fantastic. How about you, Tim?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I'm looking forward to Planescape. That is big on my gaming horizons. When is that coming out?
It comes out today, funny enough.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So good timing.
Yeah, I've watched a few YouTube videos on it. It seems like they did a really good job. They refreshed the old material and kept the best of it and gave it a new angle, a new fresh way of interacting with it.
Right. So with Planescape in D&D lore, is it like the different planes, like in Magic, with different things going on in the different planes? Like, I'm not too familiar with it in the D&D aspect, because Magic has something similar that I can talk about in a minute, too. But
yeah, and they've crossed over. There have been a couple of books, Ravnica, I think, and Theros, where these were Magic the Gathering worlds that became like D&D prime material planes. Basically, with Planescape, the premise is that reality is constructed by belief. So the most important thing in Planescape is what you believe. So there are these different guilds that believe different things and vie with each other. And then there's, at least in the new game, they made a philosopher class to take advantage of the fact that you have all these competing philosophies. So the philosophies depend a lot on your alignment. And then there are, like, for instance, the divine and the infernal realms. Those are all linked to particular alignments. So Olympus, for instance, is like neutral good. And
Got it.
Norse would be like chaotic good. And so you literally have all of creation, because you have the astral plane and the etheric plane joined to them. Then you have all the different prime material planes with their wild space where the spelljammer ships are. Pretty much with Planescape, you can do anything you want.
Okay, got it. So, yeah, so it's like a big, almost like Avengers whole everything together all at once.
Yeah, so with the multiverse, because you have all these different prime material planes.
Yeah, there you go. Yep, multiverse.
Yeah. So, other than that coming out this week, is anything else coming out this week?
Something that did just come out that has Planescape adjacent stuff to it, actually, is Magic the Gathering has been doing a thing called Universes Beyond, where it's you know, established IPs that, you know, exist already. They've done Walking Dead. They've done Stranger Things. So it's a way to bring, you know, outside IPs into Magic the Gathering. So you can play with certain cards and certain people from those IPs. So last year they did Commander decks that were Warhammer 40K decks.
Uh-huh.
So that brought that whole universe into Magic. But this year they did Doctor Who Commander decks.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, actually.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you two were Doctor Who fans or have seen Doctor Who.
I've seen Doctor Who. I'm a sometimes fan. I've been a fan of different doctors at different times. But I'm not. I have a whole crate of DVDs of Doctor Who episodes and books and audio. But I'm not like I'm more of a Stargate fan.
Okay. Zach, have you seen it?
I've watched one season, one of the doctors. I think it was the ninth doctor had one season, but only that one.
That was the eighth, I think. That was Eccleston, Christopher Eccleston.
It was Eccleston, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they brought Doctor Who over to Magic, and it's been very popular. It came out last Friday to coincide with Comic-Con as well.
Awesome.
But in those decks, there's called Planescape or Plane Chase cards, where they affect the battlefield in different ways. They're usually chaotic. So, you know, they bring different planes into Magic the Gathering, like into the battlefield. So when you're playing, you reveal one of the Plane Chase cards, and it, you know, it gives a different effect. It could be, you know, all creatures get +5/+5, or they get -5/-5, or there's a bunch of different aspects. And then there's certain things where you roll a die, and that will affect if you flip the card or you move on to the next thing. So they timed their releases really well with Plane Chase and Planescape all coming out together. So that they did a pretty good job with it, and it's helped us make it pretty easy to sell and explain to people what the what's going on exactly.
That sounds awesome, you know, and especially since they come out with the Lord of the Rings not too long ago on the Forgotten Realms. And
That was the Universes Beyond product, the Lord of the Rings one.
And now you're saying you could have The Walking Dead and Doctor Who. It boggles the mind, because before you said that they had, like, Godzilla and as well. That is awesome.
So there's a new set. There always seems to be new stuff coming out for Magic. But there was a set that came out when we almost first started doing Magic, like, 6 years ago, called Ixalan. And that was, like, a dinosaur set. There's a bunch of dinosaurs and dinosaur support. So in, like, 2 weeks maybe, or a week or so, 2 weeks, we're going back to Ixalan. So, like I said, it's all dinosaurs and stuff. So how they did Godzilla stuff with Ikoria, they're doing Jurassic Park stuff with Ixalan. Zach, I'm not sure if you saw that, Zach, or not.
I saw Jurassic Park.
I saw
Park.
The picture of the one card.
Yeah. So some of the few cards that they spoiled have been very themey for a Jurassic Park. So there's some big dinosaurs and stuff coming out. So it's looking like a fun set, like how the Godzilla stuff was.
That has got to make for some crazy gaming. I mean, and are people mixing the decks as much as you anticipate, or?
Oh yeah, that's what's really fun about Commander. I've played in the past, like, how, you know, there's different formats and stuff for Magic. I feel like Commander allows for the most creativity. Like, Zach, if you were to play Magic, I think you would like Commander a lot. Like, I have a dinosaur deck that I built back those few years ago. So, like I said, Commander offers, like, a lot of creativity in that way, where you can build a Commander deck, you can build a a fairy deck, or you can build a god deck. So these new cards coming in are going to help that kind of stuff. But it's also fun to see, you know, people do like, oh, this is a dinosaur, you know, dinosaur human tribal deck where there's humans and dinosaurs in the deck, and they're both helping each other or fighting against each other to, you know, do other effects to opponents and stuff. So yeah, people put stuff together and they're, you know, some cool stuff and really creative.
That is incredibly awesome. And some of these IPs are already being handled by other Wizards properties like Dungeons & Dragons. So I'm wondering now if they're going to cross over into D&D.
Right, yeah. They've done it before, so I would assume that they're going to do something. I would think that they're going to do something next year with more, like how they did Theros and Ravnica, like you were saying.
Is HeroClix still around?
I hear people still talking about it every so often. We don't get too many people asking in our store for it, but I do see it occasionally in other places.
Because HeroClix, you were able to have, because they licensed from everybody, you were able to have comic book heroes, for instance, from different universes like Marvel and DC, interact with and fight each other. And then they also had multiple genres, like they had Star Trek and you know, other science fiction properties. And so you were able, and they had like monsters and vampires and all sorts of other things too. So you were able to, you know, pretty much have whatever they covered, and made for some interesting games. Because a lot of people didn't just play the combat, they introduced role-playing elements into it, and then they either ignored the combat system on the HeroClix. Like, I painted over the combat system on the figures, and I just used whatever other system I was using. But they made tons of great miniatures, and they made tons of maps as well. So rating it for those reasons was always very productive.
Yeah, you know, I never thought of using them for, like, an RPG-style thing, but, yeah, that would be perfect to have a map laid out, and you're just RPing like you would, you know, D&D, but you're playing as Gambit or you're playing as Wolverine or something, and you have the nice figure to go along with it. Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, can't believe I didn't think of that.
Well, so a lot is happening in the world of gaming. Now,
there's a bunch of stuff with Magic, and there's a new Pokemon set coming out on Saturday that we're doing a pre-release for. So, yeah, busy, always stuff going on.
And these are all coming out at the same time. So you have the new Magic, the Gathering stuff, you have the new Planescape for D&D, and you have Pokemon stuff.
Especially this, they always love to put it all together for us, so it's a big expense going out, but it's fun, and everything has been you know, selling well, and people have been pretty happy with the stuff that's been coming out. So yeah, it's been good, and it's still been fun. So
and the Hasbro panic has started again all over YouTube with some of the things that Hasbro is doing. And I remember it was just over the OGL, the Open Gaming License, for a while, then it kind of died down, and now it's back with the direction that D&D is going to be taking next year, because they broke relations with publishers, and so people are speculating about it. Do you think that'll affect you? Because you were right, it didn't really affect very much the OGL scandal. Do you think this will affect things in the short or long term?
Yeah, I don't know. It was with Penguin Publishing, right? That's who they've been working for or working with for forever, right? Yeah, so I don't know. I wonder if they're going to do self-publishing, maybe. I don't know what they would why they would, you know, cut the ties there.
That's what people have been speculating, that they're going to take care of their own distribution so they get a higher percentage of the profits. That seems to be the common supposition by YouTubers.
Right, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, corporation, I guess I understand. But, yeah, I hope it doesn't – I don't think it would backfire or anything, if that's the word you want to use. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. There was a price increase already, so I don't know if that has something to do with it as well. But
and Baldur's Gate 3 has also been released, or it's being released soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. That took over. That took over everything for a while. I haven't had the chance to play it. I was just about to get it. But then I started playing a game called Sea of Stars that, if we have time, I can talk about for a second later. But Zach, were you playing Baldur's Gate? Or somebody was that I was talking to.
No, I don't have a computer good enough to play anything like that.
Yeah, it's pretty intensive.
What have you been playing, Zach? You're really big on card games and board games and your role-playing games.
Yeah. So which topic would you prefer first?
Start wherever you like.
Okay. So with board games, I think it's been a bit since we've talked really. So I picked up a couple that were pretty interesting, but one has already become kind of a group favorite. It's called Hibachi, named after the style of cooking / restaurant. The idea is everyone is playing as a hibachi chef, and you are all trying to become the most famous chef in town. The way you do that is by being the first person to make 3 different recipes. The fun part, and like where you can kind of see the theme kind of come in more, have you ever been to a hibachi restaurant where they will cut up like a small piece of cucumber or something similar and like throw it to you and you have to like catch it in your mouth?
No, I've been to hibachi restaurants in the past, and I've eaten wild boar hibachi, but no one's ever thrown cucumbers at me.
So it's a thing in certain ones where they'll, like if the whole table is like really in a, like a party mood kind of thing, sometimes they'll do that and like go around the table, see who can catch the food they're throwing. And so the way you play this game is by throwing poker chips. So there's a square board that represents not so much the hibachi grill itself, but kind of a market where there's different ingredients on sale each turn. Everyone has a stack of 6 poker chips in their color that have a hole in the middle of them. One side just has your player color, and the other side has a value ranging from 100 to 600. Each round, everyone takes 3 chips, one at a time, going around the table, and then has to throw them onto the board, making sure that your hand never goes over the board. So you have to throw it from, like, beyond it. And wherever it lands indicates what you're going to be doing for that turn. So if I draw ingredient cards to set up a new round, and we get maybe 2 cards of noodles, 2 cards of rice, a card of beef, and a card of fish, people would be trying to buy those by making sure their poker chips landed on them on the board. The reason they have the values on the bottom is because they encourage you to try to throw so the values are hidden, because whoever bids the highest amount usually gets to buy first. If it does go face up, it's still valid. It just means everyone knows what you threw. There's also a few special abilities on the board. So like one of them is at the end of the round, whoever has the highest value chip on it gets to throw an extra chip or gets to draw a card and take it for free, that kind of thing. But where the fun really comes in is it is highly encouraged to just use your turn to make sure other people get their poker chips knocked off of things they want, as opposed to you getting what you want. So a lot of the information is public. I can look at the board and say, oh, Tim needs one more recipe to win, and he's already got 2 of the ingredients for it, and the 3rd one is for sale this turn. I know he's going to be throwing his chips to try and buy that. So I can just spend my turn throwing my chips at his chips to make sure that they get knocked off of that ingredient somewhere else.
Oh, wow. That is a very unusual.
It's been a lot of fun.
Unusual sounding game.
Yeah, it's we've played it at 2 and 4. We haven't played with 3 players or 5. I do not have the fifth player expansion yet because I don't think it's on retail sale. I think just the base game is at the moment. But that's been really popular. I think we've played it like 4 times since I got it. And I think I bought it about a month ago, a month and a half. So we've been playing it pretty frequently.
Wow. Are you also throwing cucumbers at each other over home-cooked hibachi or balcony-cooked hibachi?
We haven't thrown it at each other, but we did actually go get hibachi Saturday after
playing
it with our friends. We had that as an appetizer and then went out to actual hibachi.
You should, if there's a hibachi place near you, they might want you to run the game there. And how is your Pokemon role-playing game coming along?
Going well. We've had a little bit of a slowdown because one of our IRL players moved a little bit, so now we're moving those sessions to also be online. So we're just kind of like reshuffling days of the week and trying to figure some of that stuff out to make sure that we can continue playing. But everything's at a pretty good point. You can always say that when it sounds like one of your parties is about to accidentally detonate a volcano, which I'm sure will not happen, and even if it does, not have any negative repercussions whatsoever.
Incredibly awesome. And anything else new in the gaming arena?
The only other thing I can think of that is significant on that radar in my space is I've recently gotten into an RPG that I think I've mentioned once or twice called Legend of the Five Rings.
Yeah.
So it started as a card game way back in like the 80s, I think. But I got the core book for my birthday this year, and so I finished reading through that about 3 weeks ago or so, just before I took my trip out to Utah, and I found myself really enamored with it. I had gone into it with high expectations, and it surprisingly met them for me, which was nice. They put a nice emphasis on social like roles and feats can be just as, if not more important than like physical fighting stuff. There's a lot of weight to roleplay elements. There's a built-in system of honor and glory. And so, you know, there's societal standards of a code that you're supposed to follow. And if you go against it, you might lose honor, or you could stake honor almost in a bet and, you know, be like, oh, well, if I fail, then I'll lose the honor. If I succeed, you know, then I achieve what I'm trying to do and I don't lose the honor. It's very fascinating from a lore perspective because it's been going since like the 80s, I think. And as far as I can tell, it's only been rebooted once, which was when the most recent publisher took it over. But what that means from a DMing perspective, which I'm sure that you immediately like picked up on, is that means you have how many years of established lore to like look at and use as a basis for any campaigns and things that you want to come up with. And especially since it's technically like it's been rebooted, you can say, okay, well, this was always a really interesting story to me. What happens if it happened differently? You know, so it's got a lot of depth to search into. Like I've been reading through Wikipedia after Wikipedia on this. I bought a few novels in the universe to read on the plane out to Utah and like burn through those really quick. So I'm gearing up to hopefully start a campaign of that sometime early next year, I hope. But I'm trying to get all the books in the collection first physically, so I just have 3 more, I think, that I'm trying to get a hold of. But once I do get things with that up and running, I will definitely look forward to talking more about it.
Okay, great. And I look forward to hear about it. I remember that from the early days of gaming. Dungeons & Dragons and Tunnels & Trolls came out like in the mid-70s. And I liked Tunnels and Trolls better because it was easier to learn and easier to mold adventures. D&D with to hit Armor Class 0 and like some of their other conventions, And also back then, gaming was you had a dungeon, you put different creatures that don't belong together in the dungeon. Each of them has stuff, and you actually wander around and kill things and took their stuff. And that was what the early gaming was for. And that was one of the earlier variations. Like there was chivalry and sorcery. There was Legends of the Five Rings. There were all sorts of different versions of role-playing that came out in a very short period of time. There was Rune something, I forget what, but they had Glorantha, which was their own world. And I'm glad that it's been bought, and I'm glad that it's being revitalized, and those games deserve to live on.
Yeah, and it's I had tried once years ago before I'd ever even DM'd anything. I, at a yard sale, found, I think it was their fourth gen or third gen, like, core rulebook. And I've always been a big fan of like, ninja and samurai. Again, like, that code of honor and that, like, the kind of intriguing conflicts that that naturally brings about. So I had bought it and tried to read through it, but inexperienced as I was, I, like, couldn't really get into it. And so it's nice to finally revisit that and then realize, oh, this is something I can do. Like, now that I've been more experienced, now that I've been DMing for over a decade, you know, now I kind of feel more competent with it, which is nice.
That is great. Have you guys ever adventured in the Forgotten Realms, which was one of the TSR, Wizards of the Coast, Dungeons and Dragons worlds? Excuse me. Beyond the Magic of the Gathering iteration of it?
No, I know some of my other friends from my group back home have, but I have not.
Tim, how about you?
And I'm only familiar with it from the Magic the Gathering set that came out. So some of the characters that were in there, are obviously from Forgotten Realms and everything. But that's my only exposure to it.
I was very much into some of the things. There were too many books to read and too many gaming supplies to purchase. But I liked R.A. Salvatore's stories of Icewind Dale with Driz Doerden, the drow elf ranger, and his companions of the hall. And I read like all the books, the comic books. I had a lot of the gaming supplements and rule books and guidebooks. I read it. I followed it for like a couple of decades, and then when the fourth edition came out, I stopped following it. I read the book Gauntlegrim, and even though that wasn't a bad book, it didn't seize my interest, so I just continued it. And recently I was made aware that he did this series of books where he reincarnated the characters that had died, and they were like born again as babies. So initially my reaction was, I'm not going to want to read that, but I decided to gamble on it, and it hooked me in. So now I want to catch up like a decade's worth of reading. So that's why I asked the question. I was wondering if you guys had adventured there and what you thought of the new direction that the series is taking.
Okay.
It's cool to see that it is coming back again like that, because I know like a little bit about Drizzt and his like associated characters. They did a D&D version of Betrayal at the House on the Hill, a board game that Tim and I really like. And in that, there's all sorts of little references to characters from that universe. So, like, there's a statue of Mince and Boo that doesn't say it's Mince and Boo, but, you know, if you know who it is, you're like, hey, you know, like, and they just put like, these little details on the tiles like that, where it's like, oh, it's a statue to an unnamed ranger, and you're like, I think I know who that named ranger is.
I enjoyed it mostly solo by reading, but I ran a game in Pennsylvania where it was actually in the world of Drizzt, like in Icewind Dale, and people seemed to enjoy it. And I ran it like privately at home for friends who were like in our age group. But later on, I ran versions for kids at a YMCA summer camp, and they got into As you guys who DM know, you're never not a DM. Your mind is always calculating statistics and plot devices and making maps and wondering which maps you have would substitute for the map inside your head or inside the gaming book. And it's a never-ending thing. Do you guys find that as well, that you're DMing all the time even when you're not running a game?
I definitely know what you mean, where you'll read something or watch something and you'll just be like, I wonder how would I translate this to this system? Or, you know, this is a really cool plot beat. Like, I wonder if I could do a spin on it, like, constantly. It's the good artists, what is it? It's good artists copy, great artists steal. You know, like, you just have to, like, outright, like, realize, hey, inspiration is inspiration.
How about you, Tim?
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, because I don't do too much DMing, but the stuff that I always think about is, like, you know, for when Zach does Dread and Ten Candles, he usually, asks us, you know, to come up with some ideas and write some stuff down. So whenever I'm playing some video games and stuff that have some really cool, like Diablo is a good example, you know, some really cool unique monsters and stuff, I always try to commit those kind of things to memory, or, you know, a certain picture that I see that, you know, evokes a certain type of atmosphere and stuff. I try to, like I said, try to commit that to memory so I can write that down and hopefully get that put in somewhere that we're playing.
Since you brought up Diablo, Diablo is also raising a lot of controversy. Some of the antics of Blizzard and people are saying all sorts of terrible things about the company and the latest iteration of the games. I remember when the first Diablo came out, and then there was a supplement called Hell something. I don't remember what the exact name was. And then Diablo 2, and I followed it until Diablo 2. When Diablo 3 came out, I was not happy with it, so I stopped following it then. And then it was exciting when I heard about Diablo 4. But just about every review I've seen on Diablo 4 has been a bad review.
Yeah, it's the super fans, you know, voicing their displeasure, and they're not wrong in some aspects. But I played through the base Diablo, you know, launch, and the cinematic, you know, Blizzard cinematics are always amazing, and
this was
no different. The story was awesome. It was super fun, very violent, but yeah, like cinematics and everything were awesome. But then when season one came out, because Diablo, you know, it's like a live service, so they're coming out with new seasons that have, you know, season mechanics that are exclusive to that one, and battle passes and everything. I think it's every 2 months, every 3 months they change. So they did some stuff with season one that wasn't very good. Even I didn't jump into season one. But so they've been doing some Twitch live streams the past couple weeks where they're talking about the changes to season two that's coming up very soon, actually. And it seems like it's going pretty well. There's some stuff that got fixed. There's still some things that looks like it needs to get worked on a little bit, but I think I'll be jumping back into season two. So if I do, I'll let you know how it compares to the base
Thank
game.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I love Diablo. I've read a lot of the books. I've read a lot of the comics over the years. And I again, just like I got nostalgic for Drizzt, I got nostalgic for Diablo. Again, the reviews kind of gave me pause. I don't have a PlayStation 5. There is a PlayStation 4 version I tracked down. So if I might be, if my enthusiasm and nostalgia continues, I might be looking into that. Or I might play Diablo 3 to the end and see if I like it. I don't know.
Yeah, I would, if you can, I would do Diablo 4. It has the Diablo 2 like aesthetic to it. It's very, very dark looking. Diablo 3, you know, they shifted a little bit. It was still, you know, violent and dark and everything, but 4 is way closer to the two aesthetic and atmosphere of it. But it's definitely worth playing through. The like I said, the story is fun.
Where do you get to now? Because I had several copies of two, and none of them play anymore. It kind of like when you go to connect, it disconnects you and then tells you you can't play it anymore. And you had told me that they did a Diablo 2 Resurrected or something to that effect.
Yeah, Resurrected or Remastered. It was the remastered version of Diablo 2. So, yeah, they discontinued support for original Diablo 2 because they want everybody to buy Diablo 2 Remastered and play on it. But it definitely scratches the Diablo 2 itch. It's exactly it, but just more modern and updated with some stuff. My friend is obsessed with Diablo 2 as well, and he plays it all the time.
Yeah, it's horrible that they disabled your old Diablo 2, because I was content to play the old Diablo 2. Fixed. It was fine the way it was, and it took a while to complete. And there were a lot of things I hadn't tried yet in the times I completed the game. And I was really pissed when all of a sudden they decided I couldn't play the game anymore.
Yeah, you're not alone in that sentiment. Trust me, it was also very big online when that happened.
Did you know that when D&D, the third edition launched, they did Diablo, they had Diablo sets with the third edition? They had the original Diablo game as a D&D source book. They had the Diablo 2 as a D&D source book. And then they did a series of adventures in the box set that bridged the first Diablo with the second Diablo, so that it was a continuous story. And they had Diablo miniatures.
Oh.
I used to have all these things. I don't know if I still have them, but I used to have them.
Wow, yeah, no, I had no idea that the world would fit well for D&D, so it makes sense for sure.
Now, what world that you haven't seen would you like to see? Like, for instance, with me, of course, it's mythology. There can never be enough like Greek mythology or additional mythology, and I feel they've never really explored the potential of Conan. Conan is one of my favorite fantasy figures. So there were Conan games, and some of them were fun, but they really, 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 like, barely scratched the surface of what Conan's all about. What would you like to see that you haven't seen?
Good question. Let me think about that for a second.
We'll go to Zach in the meanwhile.
I'm trying to think if there's been any book series that I really want to see adapted. I don't think I've mentioned it before, but there's a manga called Delicious in Dungeon that I've talked with Tim about, and it's very strongly based off of, if you've ever played the old Wizardry RPGs.
Yes, I remember those.
Video games. It's very strongly based off of that because they had a very strong following in Japan. And the idea is there's this giant mega dungeon where, like, magic is stronger when you're below ground in the dungeon. And if you die there, you can be revived because your spirit is, like, sustained by the extra magic. So it's like a business where people kind of go down and try to reach the bottom because there's all these legends of what's down there. And it follows the court caster the furthest down anybody's gotten. They're fighting a red dragon, and it gets their cleric in its mouth. And so before it kills her and eats her, she casts a spell to kind of emergency teleport everyone back to the surface. But because they took off all their, like, backpacks and extraneous gear before they started the fight, they now have no money and no supplies besides the weapons they were carrying.
Oh, no.
So they're trying to get back down to the red dragon before, like, her spirit dissipates so they can revive her. And every chapter, they have to catch and cook a different monster because they have no supplies. So they're, like, living off the dungeon. So every chapter is a small like fantasy recipe type of thing, and the author gets really into it, and she like gives scores like, oh, this is a dish that's high in protein and high in fat and this and the, all these different things. But I just feel like that if they did it well, like if you did like a comedic take on that, it could be very fun. I know that I saw Kickstarter ads for I think it was a standalone system called Wilder Feast instead of Wilder Beast that used some of the same ideas, where the idea was that you are hunting monsters to eat them, but it was like eating them mutated you to give you their powers and stuff. So it wasn't quite the same. But I do really love that universe, and the author just, she's got so many interesting spins on classic fantasy tropes. Her version of mimics are basically just hermit crabs. And they just grow really big, and they like to hide in bigger boxes and things like that. And so they tend to live in treasure chests until they get big enough to live in something larger, you know. I know they're making an anime of it that I think comes out next year. But I don't think they've made any games like based on or set in it.
That sounds like it'd be fun. Did you ever hear of Rat on the Stick?
I don't think so, no.
Rat on the Stick was an early campaign for Tunnels and Trolls. And instead of going into a dungeon to get treasure and kill monsters, you're going in there to start a Rat on the Stick franchise. So,
oh, okay.
Basically, you would sell Rat on the Stick to monsters who, of course, wouldn't always interact with you in a friendly way. And then basically the vermin of the dungeon would hunt rats for you. So you'd have to pay them and
okay.
They would have adventures. So it was basically whose franchise could last the longest if you were playing it that way. And if not, you could have your Band of Adventures starter franchise and have adventures along the way of starting and keeping this franchise going. So when you're talking, it reminded me of when I played that years and years and years ago. I ran that, actually.
It sounds fun.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun. And then they had another one, I think it was called Amazon Mutual, the same company, I believe, where you work for an Amazon insurance agency. So that was the pretext under which you were adventuring, and everything had to do with insurance. How about you, Tim? Do you know what you'd like to see that hasn't been seen before? Or hasn't been done
so I fell down a little rabbit hole while I was looking at something. So just because this is fresh in my mind, I've been playing a game called Escape from Tarkov. It's like a extraction first-person shooter kind of thing, but it's a very, like, almost post-apocalyptic kind of world. So that made me watch The Book of Eli again, the movie, if you're familiar with.
I've heard of it, and I might have seen it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah. I love the movie. It's very, very, very good. And the book is also one of the books that I've read, actually. It, you know, is good as well. But I haven't really seen too much other than that. And the rabbit hole that I fell down, I was like, oh, I wonder if they've ever done a comic. And sure enough, they have. So it looks like I have something new to possibly check out after I do a little bit more research to see. But the world would make also a perfect, you know, RPG where it's post-apocalyptic, but there's a certain aspect to it that is definitely way different than most other stuff that has, you know, some religious stuff in it, and it could be it could go some interesting directions with not just solely focusing on Eli himself, but the other, you know, people that you run into, or just, you know, your lay person, if you will, in the world. So there's a bunch of stuff that I think they'd be able to do with it.
So you seem to like the post-apocalyptic games more than anything else, because that's been a constant theme.
Yeah.
All the time. What first attracted you to the post-apocalyptic genre? Was it the movies of like the 80s? And
Yeah, you know, I grew up watching, you know, a bunch of John Carpenter movies, so Terminator and The Thing isn't post-apocalyptic, but I don't know. I just like that more modern aesthetic to it and the feelings that it gives, the feelings of loneliness and, you know, but still some hope and trying to, you know, figure out the next thing to see what you can do to make it. And I don't know. It's just what calls to me for some reason.
Yeah, because it's incredibly awesome. I too am pulled by like sword and sorcery and sword and sandal and some high fantasy, although not all high fantasy. So I know what that's like. You know, part of you like lives in that world all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Yep. Like how you guys were saying how, you know, you look at stuff for map making and everything for RPGs, you know, it's more morbid what I kind of think about with that, but, you know, to look at the world in different ways and stuff. But yeah, it's fun. Like I said, I don't know, it just calls to me.
And how about you, Zach? What worlds do you live in?
Primarily, I'm usually drawn to fantasy, occasionally sci-fi, not as much these days, definitely more so fantasy. I always like a good element of horror, which I always try to bring to my games, even if it's not a game that would usually kind of fit with horror. And it occurred to me as I was listening to you mentioning like the things you were interested in too. I ran a game of 10 Candles on my trip recently, and the setting for that was actually ancient Greece. And
oh, wow.
The lore was that they didn't call the gods by name, but it was very obvious which ones they were talking about. And they said that the sun god's chariot collapsed from the sky in a flaming heap. And ever since, the sun has been slowly shrinking and is going to disappear forever. You all play as people who had various positions at the Temple of the Sun, who think that perhaps the Huntress, the goddess of the moon and the sun's brother who has been grieving his death, could maybe use her light to keep humanity going. And so like they were trying to reach her and convince her to do that. And because it's 10 candles, it ended very poorly. it turned out that one of them had accidentally caused the sun god's death because they had a habit of stealing things. And they stole part of one of the wheels off of his chariot, which then caused it to fail, and he crashed and burned, and didn't tell the rest of the party this. So then when they get to the Huntress, and the priestess in the group and everything kind of entreats with her to do this, and she immediately knows what's up because the person still has, like, the piece of the spoke on them. And she's just like, oh, you dare to do this? You know, you killed my brother and then come to this house to ask me for a blessing? And she turned into, I have no idea how to pronounce this. I'm sure you know how. But the Furies, I think it's Erinius, or I'm not sure how you say it, but... you know, I went with the idea because she was a woman scorned at that point and scorned in a way that us mortals wouldn't understand because we can't understand eternal time, these things that killed her brother. Then like, but can you do me a nice favor? So then she, you know, turned into one of the Furies and you know, killed them all. And that was the end.
Yeah, the Furies were called Erinyes in Greek.
So could you say that one more time?
Erinyes.
Okay. I knew I was saying it wrong, but I had no idea what the actual pronunciation was.
If you look at, like, Zeus is actually Zephs. And Hades is Hades, and Ares is Ares, and Hercules is Heracles. You know, there's no H. Or in Hera, there's no H in Hera either. It's Ira. I don't think the gods mind, really.
Yeah, that's. I noticed that a lot with Norse mythology, too, because we call him Odin, but his original name was probably closer to Othum. There's a Nordic language symbol called a thuwas, I think it is. It's also known as a thorn. It's effectively, it's a vertical line, with effectively a lesser than symbol, like connecting to it. So it's a line with kind of a triangle coming out of it in the middle. And when that was anglicized, when they started to write down the myths and stories of these people as the, you know, Christian monks and everything spread into this area, they didn't know that it was a phonetic symbol for a TH sound, and they just wrote it as a D. And so, like, if you look back far enough, it, you know, like, you can see the original name is, it's the, you know, O, then the thorn symbol, I, and N, and, like, you know, Thor was the thorn symbol O-R, because the thorn symbol was already a TH sound, so you didn't need the two separate letters and stuff like that.
Yeah, I used to teach runes for over a decade, way back, I guess, in the part of the 80s and part of the 90s. And I was totally immersed in Norse mythology and Norse culture. My Thor's hammer from those days showed up again. I haven't seen it like in a decade at least. And Athena brought it. Look what I found, your old Thor's hammer. But the game that I play with the kids, my Mythic Adventure, it has, they've left Greece, and like in God of War, they're going like north into other parts of the world. So they've already been in Thor's Hall, and I'm doing like a fire and ice type of thing. So they're dealing with fire, and so soon they'll be dealing more with ice. And I'm going to bring in Gninga Cap, the Gaping Void. And so I get to play with Norse mythology as well as Greek mythology for a while.
That's awesome. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, we're reaching the end of our conversation already. Time flies. If the game came out, I'm going to try my best to make it out there this weekend. We've had problems coming up on Saturdays, health related, so we missed a few weeks. I want to see the Planescape module, so I'm going to try my best to make it there this weekend.
Yep, no problem. I'll have one off to the side for you.
Thank you. And how can people enter the Level 1 gaming experience? It's virtual and it's actual, and what type of things will they find when they get there?
So online you can find us at on Facebook and on Instagram at Level 1 Game Store. You can come by the shop. Bunch of new stuff going on, like I said, with Doctor Who and Magic and Ixalan and Pokemon. We're doing a few little upgrades to the shop, so probably not by the time that I see you next, but we're doing just some new graphics and stuff, so a little bit of a facelift. Nothing too crazy, but just something to spruce it up a little bit. And I'm working on some limited edition kind of stickers that that I've been working on with a graphic designer friend of mine. So we'll have a bunch of swag to give away for the holidays. There's a bunch of cool new stuff going on. We're always trying to do some different things and keep it fresh.
And it's always very pleasant coming to your shop. You and all of your cohorts are phenomenally friendly people and very welcoming, and it's like visiting a relative who lives far away. whenever at least I come to your shop, and I've seen the people in there, they always seem very happy to be there, and they're always interacting with somebody. So that is a great thing in today's world, and I'm very honored to know you.
Yes, thank you so much. That's awesome to hear, because that's exactly what we go for, you know. I mean, the word, you know, community gets thrown around a lot, but that's exactly what stores like ours do. They, you know, form communities. I've met a million friends through the store, and, you know, fun stories and everything. So I'm glad that it comes across that way, because that's what we're going for.
very powerfully. Thank you very much, Tim. And Zach, how can people contact you, and what can they expect when they enter your world?
So you can always find me on Facebook, or you can send me an email at Mr. Moonin, MRMUNNIN at gmail.com. If you ever want to talk anything about writing or RPGs or anything in that nature, I'm always up for a good conversation.
Thank you very much. And we have enough time for last thoughts. Tim, for folks who don't know much about gaming, or they're confused by gaming, What would you tell them to encourage them to try gaming?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff that makes it way easier now to get into Magic or Pokemon or D&D with starter sets and curated things that you can purchase for actually a good price now and can just jump right into the game and get learning real quick. And that's, like I said, that's what's good about, local game stores where you can come and you can talk to someone like me or Em or Cynthia or Scott. And we can sit down and teach and learn and spread gaming and everything and keep it going. There's a bunch of new college kids that have learned to play Magic in the past couple of months. And, like I said, they just came down to the store and we sat down and had a good time and learned some new stuff. It's been, it was fun.
A new generation. And Zach, how about you?
I'm sorry, what was the question? I apologize. I got lost in Tim's answer.
For those who might have heard of gaming but are confused by it and haven't tried it, what would you tell them to encourage them to try gaming?
Okay, nowadays, especially after COVID, there's a ton of access to try things online, which I know it can sometimes be a difficult commitment to say, I'm going to get out the door, I'm going to go and meet these strangers in person and sit with them for X amount of hours to discuss this. It can be a lot simpler to try and find one online. You don't need to even put your video on most of the times if you don't feel comfortable with that. You can find ones that play by chat. You can find games that will play by voice, games that have built-in dice rollers. There's a plethora of options to the point that we're essentially at like a gaming cornucopia. Like, it has never been this good or this accessible. So if you're ever scared to try looking for something smaller scale like that. It seems like less of a commitment just to get your toes wet. Even if maybe you just find a game that is comfortable letting you listen into them play to see if maybe this is something you want to try or not. But you've got a field of options.
Thank you, gentlemen. Excellent answers. And I want to get back into gaming as much as I can. I've been a DM for so long. I think I've only played like 2 games in my lifetime as a character. But the desire for it is always there. Thank you also to our wonderful audience. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called up and you patiently waited in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And again, thank you very much, Tim and Zach.
Thank you
for having me. Thank you so much.
Good night.